welcome to the Philadelphia Channel, spotlighting the innovators making meaningful impact throughout the region across a wide range of collaborative and creative fields, including philanthropy, education, technology, family life, social entrepreneurship, advocacy of the arts, and more. Here's your host, Robert Rim.
Today's guest on the Philadelphia Channel is Chris Gruitz, Executive and Artistic Director of the Annenberg Center for the Performing Arts at the University of Pennsylvania. Chris's vision returns to the Annenberg Center, its roots as Philadelphia's premier curator of innovative and groundbreaking programs, and a wide range of collaborations in dance, music, theater, and more. A signature of Chris's leadership is the cultivation of partnerships across the community, reflecting the Annenberg Center's commitment to serving the University of Pennsylvania, the surrounding West Philadelphia neighborhood, and the greater Philadelphia region. Chris is the former vice president and executive producer of Presentations, the programming and arts broadcasting division of Michigan's Interlochen Center for the Arts. He was previously the director of e-strategy at Carnegie Hall and began his career at the Seattle Symphony. Chris holds a bachelor's degree in interdisciplinary humanities with a concentration in arts management from Michigan State University, and an MBA with a focus on strategy from the University of Edinburgh. Chris, good to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm pleased to talk to you.
The Annenberg Center was founded in 1971 as a key resource for the arts at Penn and an enhancement to the arts curriculum. How does that kind of relationship influence both throughout the year?
It's a great question. I think so much of what we do is focused on the Penn student experience, both undergraduate and graduate. And if a student is involved in arts curriculum at Penn, or even non-arts curriculum, general liberal arts studies, a lot of the programs that we bring to campus and the artists that we bring to campus are working with students in masterclass settings. We're a lot of times approaching faculty to say, how can our programming enhance your curriculum? How can our programming enhance co-curricular activity in the performing arts? Penn has a really large range of activity in the performing arts in a co-curricular way. There's about 80 performance groups across campus, everything from dance to theater to a cappella to music. The Penn Music Program has 65 different performance ensembles, from orchestra to wind ensemble to choirs. So there's a lot of activity happening at the university, and the Annenberg Center really serves as the hub for a lot of that performing arts activity, both from students, but then obviously from the big range of professional artists that we bring to campus. So when those professional artists are coming to campus, our job is really to try to ensure that they're interacting with students and faculty in either supporting curriculum or providing learning experiences for students on campus. But it's not just on campus that we do that. We do that across Philadelphia as well, serving students in West Philadelphia and Philadelphia Metro. So we're really trying to hit students at the college level because we're at Penn, obviously, but then also all the way down to a preschool kindergarten level via our children's programming, and then up through high school through a lot of the different artists that we bring across dance, music, and theater.
And this extends to the cultural landscape of the entire Philadelphia region then, doesn't it?
It does. And I think it's important to remember that the Annenberg was really the first multi-venue performing arts center built in Philadelphia. It's obviously a very old theater town, the Walnut Street Theater being the oldest theater in the country. But in terms of this idea of a multi-venue space with multiple theaters and a lot of flexibility, the Annenberg was really the first one built in Philadelphia of this type. It was built, you know, in 1971, long before a lot of the bigger spaces that we have in the city were erected. So it's been a player on the scene for a very long time, and it's always had, as the second largest performing arts center now in Philly Metro, it's always had a very big role in the city's cultural landscape. In particular, bringing artists, world-class artists that wouldn't otherwise come to Philadelphia, across genres like jazz and world music, across theater, international touring theater that wouldn't have come to Philadelphia otherwise, and then across contemporary music and dance. So those artists, that very important world-class artists that wouldn't otherwise visit the Philly metro area.
And this leads to a lot of innovation in your concert programming, doesn't it? A lot of premieres and debuts for the city and for Penn.
Yeah, well, we certainly hope so. We're very much focused on artists that traditionally have skipped Philadelphia. You know, there might be an artist performing at BAM, Brooklyn Academy of Music in New York City, or at Carnegie Hall or at Lincoln Center. And, you know, over the last several years, a lot of them would be whizzing past Philadelphia on the train to perform down in D.C. And so a lot of our method here really is to think about, well, who are those really important world-class artists that may have recently or more recently been skipping Philadelphia that maybe the Annenberg historically had a relationship with, or maybe the Annenberg doesn't have any relationship with, but we know that there's a big audience in Philadelphia for these artists. We know that these artists will have impact in the city. So we're really trying to focus in large part on very important artists, international artists, national level artists that haven't been to the city, so they're having their Philadelphia debut. We're looking at work that's very innovative and contemporary, so we're looking at a lot of world premiere, national premiere, East Coast premiere work, Philadelphia premiere work, and a lot of artists that really can have impact in that way for the city and in trying to introduce audiences to artists they may have heard about or may have listened to but haven't yet had a chance to experience live in Philadelphia. That doesn't mean that we don't have repeat artists, obviously. It doesn't mean that there aren't great artists that have been to Philadelphia before that we bring and present, but we always try to have a portion of our season really focused on those types of innovative, contemporary, and harder to find artists that don't necessarily come to Philadelphia.
And you mentioned impact. So how does your 2018-19 season use the performing arts to reflect on current events, to explore our common connections?
One of the great things about being at the university is that we have a really big commitment to inclusion, to innovation, and to impact. And so you mentioned impact, and I think what we're really trying to do, and maybe we can do in a way that other places can't because of the fact that we're at a university, is to go a little bit deeper in our programming and say, well, what are artists talking about right now and what are they trying to communicate that relates to current events or some current issues? And so I would just use two brief examples. One would be Spectrum Dance Theater, which is coming to Philadelphia for the first time in October. And they have a program called A Rap on Race, which is really addressing this conversation about race in America. And this is based on the historic conversations between the author James Baldwin and the anthropologist Margaret Mead. And this is a dance theater piece that they've created, and Devere Smith was involved in the creation of this piece. And this is a great example of A, dance really moving beyond the boundaries of the discipline. It's not just dance, it's also theater. So it's this hybrid dance theater, but really this great opportunity to address this big conversation that's happening nationally right now around race in America and a historic context and conversation that happened much earlier that artists are really looking at recontextualizing or bringing about in a different form. So that would be the first one I'd raise. The other one is we have a big season-long focus this year called the Philadelphians, Migrations That Made Our City. And we're really trying to focus on historic migrations to Philadelphia from the 18th century in particular, really the colonial period when Philadelphia was founded. And we're looking at two major groups that came to the city. The first being enslaved Africans. They were at forced migration to Philadelphia, and then also European colonists. And we're trying to view these populations through the lens of performance to really ask some of those questions about America was always founded and settled by people who were migrants, who were coming to the city anew, who didn't have a history here. There was this huge immigration into Philadelphia in the 18th century when the city was being founded. And so we're trying to examine some of the music and culture that happened at that time, but also through a series of panel discussions with Penn faculty and other thinkers, address some of these bigger questions about, you know, what is our history with these migrant groups that are basically all of us now, that we're the descendants of these people, and how does that affect, you know, our legacy in Philadelphia, and how do we think about current migrations to the city and current immigration to the city, the people that are shaping culture today. So we're trying to do that through the lens of performance. We have a new work entitled Vessels that we've co-commissioned. We'll have the world premiere here at the end of February, beginning of March. And this is an artistic team coming out of New Orleans that's recreating the Middle Passage of the slave ships through a performance theater and dance piece. And so this is a contemporary work that's responding to history and asking some big questions about the people that came to American cities and settled these cities and founded these cities. What was their experience like? What was their culture? And if we examine them through the lens of today, what can we learn from that as we think about our own current circumstances?
And part of going more deeply into programming in the Philadelphian series, part of the series is called The Roots of Slavery, and it's a Philadelphia premiere with Grammy Award-winning conductor and viol player Jordi Savall. and also artists representing Europe, Africa, and the Americas. They're going to explore music by which enslaved people forged a sense of community and found a way to endure. So, accompanied by historical texts on slavery, the concert shares the musical legacy they left, which was really quite something, wasn't it?
It really was. I think what's so amazing about Jordy is that he's one of the finest early music practitioners in the world. He's a great example of what I was referring to earlier in that he's never been to Philadelphia. He performs in New York on a fairly regular basis, Washington, D.C. on a fairly regular basis, but he'd not been in Philadelphia over his long career. So we really were very keen to bring him to the city, to present him to audiences, but also this program in particular, looking at the historic context around some of this beautiful music, some amazing music that was being created despite these very, very harsh and inhumane circumstances that really built the new world. And I think he's woven together a very beautiful program, a program that provides audiences a lot of context around the history of Western slavery, really from its origins up through the 20th century. And so it's kind of this really exciting survey of music in the Western world from early European music all the way up to music of the New World, which many audiences I think will not have heard before, but will find very exciting and beautiful while also experiencing a lot of information about how difficult this subject matter really is.
And music revealing really the extraordinary resilience of the human spirit, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think that despite these circumstances, there was, you know, amazing music being created. And I think so much of the music and culture that was brought over by enslaved people was really a way for so many of them to hold on to their origins and to really communicate with each other and kind of forge a new sense of identity here. And I think Jordy's done a really amazing job of pulling a lot of different content together into a very cohesive and beautiful program.
And also part of the Philadelphian series is the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. It's a three-concert interactive experience with hosts who will provide background and insight on each work, lead conversations with the musicians between pieces, and each performance concludes with a casual audience Q&A, which is just great to see because creating that involvement from the audience. And the series includes West African musical traditions, African influences on rock, on pop, jazz, classical, folk music, and African-American composers from Burleigh to Braxton. So the African culture has made quite an impact, hasn't it?
It really has. And I think so many people who enjoy, whether it's chamber music or pop music, really don't understand necessarily or just aren't familiar with the origin story behind a lot of this music. And so with the Chamber Orchestra program, we really have a chance to examine this. The audience is really invited to a very informal, relaxed presentation. They can kind of come in and out of the performance. People grab drinks, they come in, they experience this music, they ask questions. Our partners, WRTI in the city, bring over a host to facilitate the questions with musicians. And so the audience is able to interact directly with the musicians from the chamber orchestra and really delve into some of these programs and some of the history of some of this music in a way that they wouldn't in a normal concert presentation. The Chamber Orchestra series is also an example of how we're really trying to support groups locally in Philadelphia and give them an opportunity to provide different style formats and performances than they would in their normal season to really engage the audience in a slightly different way. And I think that's something that the Annenberg, in addition to bringing in all these national and international artists, can also support a really high quality local groups, giving them a platform and the infrastructure to engage audiences in a way that maybe they haven't been doing before.
And talking about interaction and audience engagement, the Dance Theater of Harlem, which is really one of today's preeminent dance companies, it's the Annenberg's Artist in Residence for 2018-19 under the direction of and featuring a world premiere by the Philadelphia native and choreographer Robert Garland. So what does being Artist in Residence involve?
Well, I always use the illustration that, you know, an artist in residence is kind of an artist with a suitcase in some ways who's, you know, staying a little bit longer or has a particular project or area of focus in addition to their performance that they're doing with a center or with a venue. So in our case, we launched this program, the Annenberg Artist in Residence program, last year with Mark Morris, the preeminent choreographer, and we brought him and the Mark Morris Dance Group back to Philadelphia after 14 years. We did a big program with their Dance for Parkinson's program and Penn Medicine. This year with Dance Theater of Harlem, we're bringing the company back after a few years to work on the world premiere of this Robert Garland piece that they will build in Philadelphia at the Annenberg Center, while also doing a lot of community engagement, particularly in West Philadelphia, around this dance, around the art form, and around African-American community and dance. And so a lot of what we're trying to do with the Artists in Residence program is really provide artists a platform to engage with the community in a different way, to get out to Philadelphia public schools and do master classes and training with performing arts students, to bring special events into the neighborhood and into the community. So meet and greets before the shows, post-concert talkbacks. There's even going to be a little ballerina meet and greet for Dance Theater of Harlem with dancers who want to meet some of the professionals. So it's kind of a range of activity that artists can do while they're in Philadelphia, but also in the case of Dance Theater of Harlem for this year, they're going to be focused on this world premiere and kind of finishing that world premiere piece and getting it in shape for its first performances for audiences here in Philadelphia.
And the kids love that kind of interaction, don't they?
They do. And I think it's really important for a lot of the audience that we serve to be highlighting and showcasing artists of color, that younger kids in West Philadelphia, for example, can see examples of artists, professionals who represent their culture and their background. And I think that's so much of our commitment to diverse artists and diverse audiences is trying to make sure that we're connecting artists with different populations in Philadelphia and that we're really trying to serve the whole community, not necessarily what people would think of as a traditional performing arts audience, but really an integrated audience that is very diverse, very reflective of the city at large.
And now a word from Arch Street Press. Better to speak of it. Fostering Relationships and Results Through Creativity is a book of core management and personal values written in collaboration with Clive Gillinson, Executive and Artistic Director of Carnegie Hall, offering firsthand experiences from Gillinson and the leaders of key nonprofit, corporate, educational, and cultural institutions, including the New York City Department of Education, Museum of Modern Art, New York Public Library, and Juilliard, and major performing artists such as Joyce D. Donato, Anne Sophie Mutter, Jesse Norman, and Michael Tilson Thomas. The book appeals to readers, including nonprofit directors and managers, corporate executives and employees, arts administration staff and students, and the public interested in the health and well-being of the arts. Exploring the vital benefits of innovation and organizational management, serving others and effective partnerships, access and mentoring, budgeting and well-considered risk, media and effective communications, education, and lifelong learning. We now return to Chris and Robert.
Tell us about the special Arts for Youth show.
We serve about 8,000 students a year through two mechanisms. The first is Arts for Youth, or what we're calling a student discovery series, where we bring in about 6,000 to 8,000 kids per season to the Annenberg Center. And these are children from really pre-K and K up through high school that are bused in or come over on public transport to the center to see performing arts across dance, music, and theater. And we try to do a nice range of activity each year for them. And in many cases, for some of these students, this is their only access to the performing arts. So they wouldn't otherwise have access to any performances. So our job is really to try to present some great art and performance for them, obviously, but to really make sure that they're having a welcoming experience and a positive experience in the theater, because for many of them, they will have never been in a theater beforehand. And we're trying to really give them exposure and access so that this kind of ignites a spark for many of them. The other mechanism that we have to serve students is through our Children's Festival, which is the Philadelphia Children's Festival. It's the oldest children's festival in the country. And it's really a showcase of a broad range of artists across dance, music, and theater in a concentrated period of 3 days, where we're serving the first 2 days of Philly Metro students. So we have thousands of kids coming each day to experience a range of performances in all of our venues and across the campus. And then the last day is kind of a family day for general audiences in Philadelphia. And there's outdoor performers and food and all kinds of activity happening, hands-on crafts and different learning experiences. And it's now really becoming the largest showcase of the performing arts for youth in Philadelphia. Last year, we had about 15 partners from across the city, museums and arts organizations who had come over to participate and do an activity or a performance with students and with children. And then in addition, we have a lot of main stage performances for families and for youth. And so I think a lot of what we're trying to do is really offer families and students an alternative to screen time, for instance, or just mass media that families would consume either at home or in movie theaters. We're trying to remind people that the performing arts are alive and well. The performing arts are a vital part of the human experience. And for a lot of students, they're going to see a range of performances that wouldn't necessarily otherwise be able to see in Philadelphia. So they're going to have access to a range of artistry that isn't otherwise available. And we think it's a really important service. We think it's really important to make sure that younger generations are comfortable and feel good going to a theater or a venue so they have a positive experience and they want to come back.
And this year's Children's Festival will be on May 2nd through 4th in 2019. And the alternative to screen time is so key, isn't it?
The performing arts asks people to do a lot, right? We ask them to be quiet, to sit in a dark theater for an hour or two, to turn their phones off, to disconnect from the real world. And I think that is a very important space as the world gets busier and we have more information thrown at us and everyone is really inundated with marketing messages and media at all times now. So what we do in some ways is requires a lot of the audience, but we know that once the audience comes in and does kind of let go of the outside world for a little bit, for that little bit of time that they're with us, they 9 times out of 10 are having a very positive, enriching, and hopefully transformative experience where they leave in a very different state of mind from when they entered the theater. And we feel that that's a very important role to play in the fabric of a city, in the fabric of a university, and in today's world.
And that applies to your co-presenting partnership with Next Move Dance, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I think, you know, the Annenberg and Next Move have presented dance together for about 35 years. And so it's always been a co-curated, co-produced series where we want to bring the best in dance to Philadelphia. And that is certainly the case this season. We have our largest dance season ever with 11 companies. And if you look at it, it's really a range of different dance styles, really amazing companies. We talked about Dance Theater Harlem, the Martha Graham Company is coming with their Eve project, which is really addressing the 100th anniversary of women receiving the right to vote and looking back at Martha Graham's choreography and then looking at current female choreographers. We also have companies that are just bringing just a range of work. There's, you know, people like Body Traffic, which is a fantastic company. There's Caleb Tyker, who's a really great tap phenomenon, who's coming. Jessica Lane Dance, she's originally from Pennsylvania. She's a really phenomenal modern dance choreographer. So it's a range of styles. It's a range of content. And I think Next Move and the Annenberg have always been committed to trying to bring the best in modern dance to Philadelphia. And as a result, it's always been one of the major stops nationally on the national dance touring circuit.
And there again, Next Move Dance provides many opportunities for the Philadelphia regional community to interact with the artists through masterclasses, through artistic collaborations, workshops, children's programs, and so much more, doesn't it?
It does. And I think a lot of what we do is we work together to make sure that people have access to masterclasses. There's always a pre-concert discussion with the artistic director. There's always typically post-concert talkbacks. So when people are coming to a dance performance, they're really understanding what they're seeing. They're getting the full range of information for the type of program that they're experiencing.
And you've got a few site-specific performances, for example, in Rittenhouse Square and also at a local pub. That bring the Annenberg Center's program beyond really conventional theater walls. How does that work?
We've always approached programming here, and in particular since I arrived, around using the campus and Philadelphia as our canvas. It's not so much just the three theaters that we have at the Annenberg Center, but it's really the type of programming that we're putting together, the type of production or performance is not necessarily always suited to just our theaters. We know that we really sometimes want to go to where the students are, to where the audiences are. And so in this season's case, we're looking at the Church of the Holy Trinity as a great space at the Crossing. The phenomenal contemporary choir that's based out of Philadelphia has used historically for their Christmas concert, and that was a space they wanted to use. We wanted to work together, so we decided to stay with that space in Center City. It's a beautiful acoustic for the type of program that we use, and that's just a better space for that program than the Annenberg Center itself would have been. And in the case of the play Two Pints by the Abbey Theatre, the National Theatre of Ireland, this is a production that was written by Roddy Doyle for a bar. It was written to have two actors at a bar. So it's toured Ireland and it's touring the U.S. now. And so we've partnered with a local business, the Blarney Stone, which is owned by a Penn graduate in University City, which is a great Irish bar. It's perfect for this type of performance. And we'll be bringing that play in the National Theatre of Ireland to this pub in University City. So it's a very different experience, obviously, than coming into the theatre, but people are going to see this world-class theatre production from the Abbey Theatre in their local pub, which is really exciting, and it's been really embraced by our audiences. I think the entire run is going to sell out, to be honest with you.
And that's a great example of Annenberg's close engagement with the community. That can directly lead to positive social change and awareness, can it?
Well, we hope so. So much of what we're trying to do, as we've discussed, is really bring programs that get people thinking, that get people engaged, that when people are leaving a performance that we present, they're hopefully in a different state of mind, hopefully a much more positive state of mind, and that they've had a great experience and it's really drawn them out of their day to day. And that's so much what the performing arts tries to do, and so much of what we try to do through our programming.
Using innovation and creativity to transform lives. Well, on that note, and on using personal and organizational methods, listeners can find out more about the Annenberg Center and its programs at annenbergcenter.org or by phone at 215-898-3900. Chris, good to have you with us today, and all the best over the coming year.
Thanks so much for having me. I very much enjoyed it.
Access, stream, and download the Philadelphia Channel bi-weekly, part of the International Innovate podcast series on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, iTunes, and online at innovatepodcast.org. On behalf of the Philadelphia Channel team and our collaborators, good to have you join us.